What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. And today's episode, we're going to recap the last three games for the Wizards. Two losses, one against Milwaukee, one against OKC. Pretty expected losses there. And then a win, a rare win on this episode. It's back-to-back episodes actually talking about a win, which is crazy. Wizards defeating Charlotte pretty handily at home in a really good, well-rounded performance that was dominated by none other than Jordan Poole. Who's in the midst, by the way, of a career season? That's what we're going to talk about a lot in this episode. But we're going to recap those three games. I want to give you an update on the tank standings, like we do every episode, upcoming schedule for the Wizards, some housekeeping there. And then I got a new segment at the end of the show. Greg's current top five big board. I'm going to give you my top five prospects at the moment. And this is going to be a weekly occurrence every episode because this is changing. Obviously, guys perform well some weeks. Don't perform well the other weeks, and I want to give you where I'm looking at, because right now the Wizards at 4-23, other than the 5-win Pelicans, we'll get into the tank standings later, they're not really rivaled for the worst team in the league. And the Pelicans are getting healthy now, and when Ingram, McCollum, and all them are full, they should be a much better team than they are, especially if Zion comes back too. So I'm not too concerned. The Wizards, realistically, if they get the worst record, like is expected, this will be, the worst pick they can get is five. So that's why I'm going to do my top five prospects for the end of the episode. But to start, I want to talk about the Wizards' victory over Charlotte, because this was a really good win. The victory over the Nuggets was great. I mean, look, they didn't play any defense in that game. Jokic had 56, and the Wizards just couldn't be stopped offensively, and they won. It was a good game, but they didn't dominate for four quarters like they did in the second win of the season against the Hawks. And I thought that the Charlotte game kind of resembled that in terms of, it was a four quarter effort. They played really good all game. 114 points isn't a dominant defensive showing. But for a team like the Wizards that has really struggled, it's probably the worst. I think still the 30th ranked defensive rating in the league. 114 points for a team that probably gives up 120 to 125 every night is better. Nothing to like celebrate, but notable. I thought that they held their own throughout four quarters. Everyone kind of stepped up, and there was a lot of good performances that I want to highlight. But the first is Jordan Poole. 27 points, 7 of 15 from the field, 5 of 10 from 3. Really efficient numbers there for a guy, by the way, that everyone tries to tab as inefficient. Two blocks and two steals again for a guy that everyone tries to tab as a defensive liability. What I tell those people is watch what he's done this season, because it seems like a lot of people watched him last season, saw he wasn't playing that well in the beginning, started clowning on him, and have checked out others ever since. Because there's no way you can still say Jordan Poole is one of the most inefficient players in the league if you've watched any ounce of Jordan Poole basketball this year. There's no way you can say he's a defensive liability when you've watched how hard he's played on defense and how it's translated into blocks, into steals, into actually good defensive numbers. Like he's not an all-world defender. I don't think he ever will be, but he tries. He gives maximum effort. He's really, obviously put in the work to get better on that end, and it's showing. So he was phenomenal, led the Wizards to the victory, made some big plays down the stretch to keep that lead where it was, and keep Charlotte at arm's length, and eventually the Wizards put out the win. As of the point, it was 39.5%, but now it's 41, I think 41.2% that Jordan Poole is shooting from three, which is career high. To this point, absolutely remarkable numbers, and it's so good because when you consider, even in his best year, excuse me, even in his best year in Golden State, he was shooting 36% from three, and every other season has been below that. So he has raised his 3-point percentage by 5 total points this season, which is remarkable, especially the volume he's shooting it. He's taking 10 plus threes a game, and he's making it at a 41% clip. That's very efficient. That's very impressive. And it's awesome to see that kind of growth from Poole from year to year. But he was phenomenal against Charlotte. Alex Saar, also phenomenal. 19 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks. I mean, I would say, apart from his 20-point game he had a couple weeks back, that's his best performance as a Wizard, as an NBA player. Near double-double. 5 assists as well for a big is pretty good. 3 blocks, that's pretty normal for him, honestly, at this point of the season. But was really impressed with his game, his floor game, in terms of how he saw the floor. Obviously, the 5 assists jump out, but he was making the right plays, even if it didn't result in assists. He was finding the right guy on rolls. He was taking the right shot. He was taking open threes. Like he at this point, it's not like Alex Saar is forcing the three ball anymore. He's trusting his inside game, which is opening his outside game, instead of just hoping the threes go in, so they have to, respect him there and then he can drive. He's kind of going the other way, doing a different approach, kind of going reverse, and I kind of like that because it's opening the floor a lot more, giving him a lot more confidence. And as a result, he's shooting 46% from three over his last five games. I mean, let that sink in. For a guy that I think made two threes in summer league, shot like 9% from deep, even struggled, to begin the season. He was shooting like 21% from three. I think he's up to around 30% now, which is pretty good. Obviously not great 30%, but from where he started, it's good. And to be 46% from deep for a 7-footer, 19-year-old player to shoot 46% from three, I mean, it just shows his growth. It shows how good he can be. It shows how high his ceiling actually is. And look, I don't want to be that guy because, making premature takes isn't the best. Obviously, it usually comes back to bite people. But different situations as well, I might add. That's pretty important. But here's what I'm gonna say. You had all of these people after Alex Saar, after Alex Saar's summer league, going at him and saying he's the biggest bust in NBA history. He's terrible. He's Kwame Brown 2.0. He shouldn't have been the number two pick. It should have been Reed Sheppard. It should have been, a multitude of players. I will simply add that Reed Sheppard, who a lot of people said the Wizards should have taken, even if they had the number one pick, but definitely at number two, that said Reed Sheppard was a better player and that Reed Sheppard was a clear steal. I even had Rockets fans laughing in my mentions that the Wizards passed on Reed Sheppard after he had a really good summer league. He is averaging 3.7 points per game, 1.2 rebounds, 1.2 assists on 36% from the field. I mean, look, Alex Saar is probably averaging around 27 to 30 minutes. Reed Sheppard is averaging, let me pull up his season-long stats because I want to make sure I'm getting the full scope here. Reed Sheppard is averaging 12 minutes a game. So look, a lot of different sample sizes for the averages, but nonetheless, like he's not shooting efficiently either. He's shooting 36% from the field, 31% from three. It's not like Reed Sheppard is balling out as people thought. And he's behind a lot of people in the rotation. I get it. But at the same time, you have to see where you were with Alex Saar. And for all the people that just left and were like, he's terrible after 2 to 3 summer league games, I want you guys to shut up. I want you guys to come back in my mentions and I want you to apologize. Not to me, apologize to Alex Saar. Because the takes, the people, if you ever mention Kwame Brown in the same sentence as Alex Saar after five games, you don't deserve to talk basketball. And case in point, what we're seeing now. And look, Alex Saar, I think over his last five games, averaging like 13.7 points, 9 rebounds, which for the people that said get in the paint, you're 7 foot, keep like rebound the ball, he's doing that. Shooting 46% from three over his last five. So again, this is exactly why you don't grade a player after two summer league games, after three summer league games. The summer league is for the player to get adjusted, to figure stuff out, to see where they are against the competition, their age or a little above, a little below. Alex Saar got that. It was kind of a reality check to say, look, I kind of have a lot of room to improve, and you knew that. He's 19 years old. He has a long way to go. He's pretty raw in terms of a lot of his skills, and he realized that. He even struggled his first 5 to 10 games in the league, but he's coming along, as most rookies do. They take some time at the beginning to adjust and figure it out, and then they gradually improve and get better, and that's what Alex Saar is doing. And so the improvements don't need to be vast. They don't need to be humongous, but slowly but surely, he's moving along both ends of the floor, and that's also great to see. So, for all my people that were calling him Kwame Brown, that were saying we need to take Reed Sheppard, please, 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 reserve your takes until after 2 to 3 years, so we can actually assess it instead of just, throwing out outrageous takes left and right. Because most of the time, like this case, you're gonna be wrong and you're gonna look stupid for it. Apart from Alex Saar, I talked about Poole, but Justin Champagne was flat out superb. 14 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, this guy has just been so impressive ever since. And look, this is a guy that even last year I was saying, please play him, please play him, please play him. I was mentioning him in the beginning of the season. He deserves a roster spot. They gave him the two-way, which I was fine with because I knew he'd, for the most part, be with the Wizards. But absolutely phenomenal in his time with Washington, especially when he's been playing this year. And I tweeted this out after I think the Bucks game. Yeah, I believe the Bucks game. I tweeted this out. Justin Champagne's last 5 games, basically the 5 games since being inserted into the rotation. 23 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals. 14 points, 8 rebounds, 5 steals. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 7 of 13 from the field. 13 points, 14 rebounds, 3 steals. 14 points, 8 rebounds, 5 of 7 from the field. I mean, if that's not a rotational player on your 4-23 basketball squad, I don't know what you're doing. That's a guy that on some nights can drop 20 points. On other nights can put up 14 rebounds, 5 steals some nights, is always going to be an efficient shooter. And is going to get you at least 8+ rebounds. I mean, this is the guy that averaged 12 rebounds in college at Pitt. Like he's a knack for the board. Can score efficiently at that. Can knock down threes. Great defender. What more are you looking for? Honestly, what are you looking for? He is a guy that has just solidified his role and should solidify a role in this rotation to move forward. He's been great, and I'm really excited to see a guy like him get some minutes, kind of reward him some starts as well for what he's been doing, because it shouldn't go unnoticed. He's balling, and rightfully so, he's getting rewarded. So really happy that Brian Keefe has recognized that and started in the last 3 to 4 games. That's the Charlotte win. Really impressive stuff from the Wiz to pick up win number 4 on the year, improving to 4-21. But the next 2 games were, I want to say, schedule losses, but games that you didn't expect the Wizards to win. However, when you go into Milwaukee, a team that you competed pretty hard with last time you played at Milwaukee, you go in there and they don't have Giannis, they don't have Dame, and it's not a problem for them. I mean, you let Bobby Portis dominate you for 34, 10, and 8. That can't happen. You let the Bucks shoot 42% from 3. Again, perimeter defense has been an Achilles heel for this team all season. All defense in general has been, but specifically on the perimeter, has been an issue. And it seems like it's not getting solved anytime soon because you're letting teams shoot 42% from 3 against you. That can't happen. I mean, the Bucks were just, it was target practice for them the entire night. No resistance whatsoever. And so, obviously, without Giannis, without Dame, it's not like the Wizards, like, it's an embarrassment if they don't win. But they only lost by 11. They were down by 20 at some points. Like, this was a blowout. They just kind of pulled it together at the end when the bench players were in. But still, just really poor effort in a game that I think they could have easily won, very easily won. And granted, they didn't have Kuz for a 9th straight game, and I get that. He's now missed, I think, 15 of their 27 games. And we'll talk more about him later. But this was a game that I thought they could steal, and they just didn't show up. And that wasn't great. But some positives. We always try to look at the positives. Kispert. After he really struggled since that ankle injury, it seems like he kind of took some time to find a shot because he had a solid game against Charlotte in his first game back. Dropped 16 points on 3 of 5 from 3 against the Bucks. Really looked great from the field. 14-point night against Charlotte before that. So Kispert's kind of coming along, and then we'll talk about it in OKC. But he was one of the better players as well against the Thunder. So, nice to see Corey Kispert finding a shot after he struggled a lot to begin the season. Jordan Poole, 26 points, +8 net rating. He was the only Wizard with a positive net rating. Kind of showed that when he was on the floor, good things happened. When he wasn't, bad things happened. 26 points again. So, another solid showing from Jordan Poole. Bilal Coulibaly was superb, one of his best games of the season. 20 points, 12 rebounds, which is a career high, by the way. And his rebounding has been great. For a guy that wasn't necessarily getting his nose in the paint last year in his rookie year, he's figured it out. He's using his frame, his size, his length, and he's grabbing boards at a high rate, which is nice. 5 assists, 3 steals as well. So got it done, in multiple areas of the game. But my favorite thing is his shot is back and his aggressiveness is back. And I'm not trying to kick a man when he's down, Kuz being out, but it feels like Kyle Kuzma being out always unlocks Bilal as an offensive playmaker. It kind of, it lights a fire in him to be like, look, there's not Kyle Kuzma here to take shots and to kind of facilitate on offense. You have to be that guy. You have to facilitate offense, find your teammates, get shots for yourself because they're not just going to, show up in your lap. And he's kind of done that. It's kind of like a little reality check for him when he's out. And so that's been nice to see. Really good game from Bilal to cap a 5-game stretch where, after a great first 10 games and a really bad next 10 games, Bilal's last five games have been his best, realistically, of the season. This is Bilal's last five games: 17 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists; 27 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists; 19 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists; 15 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists; 20 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. Should be 12 rebounds. But that's just the, that's like, what, 18 and a half points per game, about 6 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game. That's terrific for a guy in year two that's 20 years old. Are you kidding? Like, and again, this is why I said not to panic during that stretch where you were struggling. Like, it's there. Bilal has it. I don't know how to explain it, but he has what it takes to be an elite two-way player. Especially if he can really get that three ball down, like you've seen at points this season. The sky's the limit. He's learning how to use his body, his frame to create space down low. His dribble moves has gotten better. And a lot of times, like last year, he really couldn't dribble. He'd be pretty stationary with his shots. But he's kind of facilitating for himself. In transition, he's unstoppable. And the best part is 5 assists per game is good for Bilal. That's a lot better than he used to have. He's really seeing the floor a lot better than he did in his rookie year, obviously, and even the beginning of this year. And you're just really seeing him come into his own. So really, really nice to see that. Despite the disappointing loss without Giannis or Dame, I thought those three guys, Poole, Kispert, and Bilal, had pretty solid performances. But that dropped the Wiz to 4-22. And then, yeah, the Thunder. The Wizards entered as seven, I think it closed at 17.5 point underdogs. Again, the Thunder are the best team in the West. The Wizards are the worst team in the league. You really didn't expect much, but I tweeted this out before, my keys to the game. The only key I had was to compete. I feel like in a lot of Wizards losses this season, most fans have walked away embarrassed, defeated, just not moved, pretty numb, to say the least, because it's not even close or competitive from the jump ball. But the losses that have kind of made the fans a little excited or intrigued are the ones where the Wizards really shouldn't win, but they still compete and hold their own. You saw that against Boston the other time that the Wizards played them in Washington when they really competed and held their own. At Cleveland a couple of nights ago, the Wizards really competed and held their own. Fans weren't, disappointed in that. And you can add the Thunder game right in there with them because through three quarters, the Wizards were only down four. They were ahead by three to end the first quarter. At halftime, they were only trailing, I think, by four. At the end of the third, even again, only trailing by four. And look, the Thunder, I think, began 19-2 to begin the fourth. SGA took over. I mean, just they're so much better than the Wizards. And the Wizards kind of ran out of gas. No Kuzma, again, no Bilal, who missed the game with a groin injury. Sarr was a late scratch with lower back soreness. Again, that's like the third or fourth game he's missed with it. So I don't know if it's a concern, but not great. But the Wizards competed. Like the first three quarters, I think what they did well was they played fast. They're the fourth fastest playing team, fourth fastest pace of play in the league. When they can dictate the pace and play fast, run in transition, that's when they excel. And they dictated the pace for the first three quarters. But in the fourth, they got it to SGA. They played ISO ball, and they stepped up their defense. So they dictated the pace, and when that was the case, they dominated. And so it's clear what the recipe for success is for the Wizards. It's not easy to sustain that for four quarters. And that's what you saw in the loss to OKC. Jordan Poole was phenomenal again, 31 points. He's now shooting 41% from three on the year, which they said at the beginning is a career best. 5 of 12 from three. He had an unbelievable, if you didn't watch the game, it was like shot clock winding down, like 29 seconds left before the half. He got the ball off a pass from Brogdon, literally like a step in front of half court, like at the OKC logo, and just launched a three. Nothing but net. I mean, it was really impressive. And that capped, I don't think he hit a three. I think he was 0 of 2 in the second half from three, but five threes in the first half. I think he became the fourth player in Wizards franchise history to have three straight games of five plus made three pointers, which is very impressive. Joined the legend Davis Bertans, who was the last person to do it. Him and Beal, I think. Arenas did it as well, but that was kind of the main storyline I took away. The other two are pretty not good. Bob Carrington got fouled pretty hard at the end of the first half. Was down for a bit, walked gingerly, returned to the game, but then I think at the end of the third, early fourth, you kind of saw him limping into the locker room. I didn't get much of an update from the Wizards or from any of the beat writers that were actually at the game. Obviously, I'm not there, so I don't know if Ryan Keefe said anything in his presser, but I guess I'll update that when it comes out. Bub's been, there's been a couple times where Bub's like limped off the floor, exited the game, and I feel like he usually comes back, and is fine the next game. But that's something to look at. And then Marvin Bagley, man, and I, this is really upsetting for a guy like Marvin Bagley that's fought through injuries his whole career. Really can't seem to catch a break. Hasn't played much this year, but has been pretty solid in his contributions when he's played. He had a really scary looking injury in the fourth quarter. It was just an unfortunate play. He was under the basket trying to get a board, and I think it was Hartenstein fell into his knee and kind of rolled up on Bagley. You see it a lot of times in the NFL with like offensive linemen when they get rolled up on from behind or from the side, and their leg gets caught under them and their body weight goes the opposite way. So I didn't see anything like break, but Bagley was screaming in pain on the floor, was down for a bit. The team surrounded him. He was helped off the floor, but he couldn't put any weight on that leg. I think it was his right leg. So I don't want to speculate if it's a knee injury, but a lot of times with ACLs, that's kind of how you see it. So we'll get an update on that, but not good. I think what happened on the play was Hartenstein was rolling to the rim. Kispert tried to check him. Basically, kind of impede his progress to the rim. It's a basketball play, but Kispert made some contact with him. I don't know if Hartenstein tripped over himself or over Kispert, or if it was the shove. I wouldn't even call it a shove. He really Kispert barely put his hands on him, but Hartenstein fell to the floor nonetheless, rolled into his leg, and it doesn't look good. I saw a lot of people, and I posted the video to Twitter, so you can check it out on my Twitter if you're curious to see how he got injured. But a lot of people were kind of at odds in the comment section. Some saying that Corey Kispert shoved Hartenstein into the leg of him, and that's why Hartenstein fell to the ground, i.e., not Hartenstein's fault. And then there were other people saying that Corey barely touched Hartenstein, and he kind of flopped, and as a result, this injury shouldn't have happened in the first place. Look, I'm not here to make speculations, but it didn't really look like Corey Kispert did enough to send a 7 foot, 250+ pound man to the ground like that. But nonetheless, I don't want to speculate. Again, there's no way that Hartenstein's intent was to do that. And I think that's the main thing. It was a basketball play, and an unfortunate, injury happened. So, Bagley, it doesn't look good. We'll get an update on it, I'm sure, today, in the next day or so. But again, really scary looking injury for Marvin Bagley. So obviously not ideal to see two guys in Bub and Bagley exit the game with injuries. But that's kind of where the Wizards are at the moment, especially with an already pretty full injury report in terms of Kuzma, who's missed 15 to 27 games this year. Koulibaly with a groin injury. Alex Starr with back soreness. Sadiq Bey obviously hasn't played this year with an ACL injury. So injuries have pretty much plagued the Wizards. And that's not even factoring in Malcolm Brogdon missed the first 10 to 15 games of the season, and then another 2 to 3 after that. So obviously you had Kispert with the ankle injury, George with the ankle injury. So injuries have hurt this team. Not obviously the reason they're 4-23, but haven't helped. And you never want to see injuries like that. So prayers up to Bagley. Hopefully Bub's okay as well. But that kind of recaps the last three games for the Wizards. And now we can move on to some other things. Wizards sit at 4-23 right now. This is your weekly edition of the Tank Standings. I know this is all your guys' favorite part of the show because, again, I'm sure a lot of people aren't watching Wizards games this year, which I don't blame you for. I'm kind of a sicko for not missing a single game this year, obviously. But the main goal, obviously, of this season is player development. But a bad record doesn't hurt either. And that's kind of why the team is as bad as it is. It's by design. And so a lot of fans, I'm sure, are looking just at the standings. They're standings watchers, and they're kind of like, okay, hopefully the Wizards keep losing. Let's see who else we want to keep winning so that they can, get away from the Wizards in those standings. The Wizards are obviously the worst team in the league at 4-23. The Pelicans are right behind them at 5-25, which is surprising. I mean, if you think the Wizards have had injuries, the Pelicans have had so many injuries. It seems like every year they have so many injuries. But they're 5-25, and I mean, once they get full, I mean, Ingram, Zion, Murray, McCollum, Murphy, like they have a squad, but they are just so injured. And they've been closing games. They should have beat Denver the other night in overtime. They completely sold. But you're going to be rooting for the Pelicans because that's a team that you want to get healthy and just kind of get away from the Wizards because they're the closest right now. And at three, you got the Raptors at 7-23, the Hornets at 7-22 are at four, and then five is Utah at 7-21, who, by the way, prior to tonight's loss at Cleveland, had won two straight games on the road against Brooklyn and Detroit. So look, the Jazz have been pretty disappointing, I think, this year, especially considering they're kind of in no man's land, but they've kind of strung together some wins as of late. So they're kind of distancing themselves. And apart from that, the next closest team is the Blazers at 9-19. The Nets have 10 wins, Pistons. So the Wizards are kind of sitting pretty at the worst team. And it's interesting the stretch they have coming up, because they have out of the next six games, four are winnable. I mean, they have four. They start a four-game homestand after they return from OKC. It's versus the Hornets, two games against the Knicks, and then versus the Bulls. And then they head on the road for home and home at New Orleans, then versus New Orleans. There's four winnable games in there. I mean, Charlotte at home, Chicago at home, and then both games against the Pelicans, especially if they're not, playing a lot of their guys, if they're out injured. You could easily split that home and home with the Pelicans. And if you don't, then it's fine because you lost two games to a team that you're right next to in the tanking standings. So I don't really think that that series can go poorly for the Wizards, unless, of course, they sweep them and then they don't have the worst record. But at the same time, you just beat the Hornets pretty handily. I think they can do it again. I don't think the Bulls are particularly good at all, but they seem to have the Wizards' number because they beat them last time in Washington by 30. Both those Knicks games, I think, are going to be neutral site games. The Knicks fans travel really well, and they're so much better than the Wizards that they're going to blow them out. But at the same time, you never know with this Wizards team. They beat Denver at home, so who knows, maybe? That could be wishful thinking. But definitely four of the next six games are winnable for the Wizards. In terms of that, I at 4-23, I was kind of curious, and I put out a poll today as to what fans were kind of grading the Wizards season at this point. Because when you look at it from an outsider's perspective, 4-23 seems like probably the worst start to a season in franchise history, which I think it is. But again, if you are a Wizards fan and you're tapped into the rebuild, I should say, you know that that is by design. And so I wanted to kind of get a temperature check from Wizards fans on how they would grade the Wizards season up to this point. And as of now, this is after, I think, 9 hours, eight hours, I should say, of the poll being out. These are the results. A or A minus, 21%. 16% say B or B minus, 25% say C or C minus, and 38% say D slash F. So that's a resounding majority of Wizards fans saying that they would grade this a D or an F. Basically, they'd grade the season as a pretty bad failure. And I get it, the record isn't great, and especially the way that they played in some of these losses isn't the competitive, style of play you'd hope, even in losses. But again, for the people that said A or B, I think the main thing they were saying is, look, yeah, this is by design, and I'd hope that they'd be more competitive. But look, you're tanking. Like, whether it's an ugly tank or a non-ugly tank, you're tanking. You're trying to lose. That's the objective. And if you're trying to lose, your record right now is a good reflection of that. And they kind of hung their hat on. Look, Bilal's been superb. Alex Sarr showed signs. Bob and George have had their ups and downs, but they've showed that they are good NBA players, or at least they have the potential to be. Jordan Poole's been phenomenal, and if you trade guys like Kuz, Brogdon, and Valanciunas, this is an A plus season for me. And so I can't really fault with both sides, and I understand a lot of people said it's too early to tell, and I get it, but that's kind of where Wizards fans sit at this point in the season. So that was a cool poll to have. Another thing I was thinking about. Just and this is kind of a side note because it doesn't necessarily go with the episode. It's kind of a curveball, but I was just thinking the other day, like what was the thought process in extending Rashawn Holmes? And I know that's probably a name you haven't even thought of or heard in weeks, probably even months, probably since the Wizards extended Rashawn Holmes, you haven't really heard him mentioned. But I don't. I'm struggling to find what the reasoning for that extension was, because if you remember in the offseason, he had a team option. I think it was 12.9 million. I think what the Wizards did was they picked his option up, but then they extended him. and gave him like an extra year on it to basically make it a 2-year, $25.9 million extension, which I didn't really get at the time, but I said, okay, maybe they're gonna play him and he's gonna be a trade chip. And then they signed Valanciunas, and you're like, oh, well, they have Bagley as well. They have Saar. Where does Holmes fit in this equation? And the answer is nowhere because he hasn't played. He's played three total games all year. One of those was garbage minutes. The other one was kind of filler, for a total of 18 minutes this season. He's 31 years old. Like, here's my question. Like, is Rashawn Holmes a trade candidate? Because if so, like, how are you going to entice a team to trade for this 31-year-old when he's played 18 minutes this season? And he's making, pretty penny at $13 million a year and is in an expiring contract because he still has another year after this. So, like, what are we doing here? If he's a trade candidate, maybe play him like you're doing for Valanciunas to entice a team to trade for him. Is he just a veteran presence? Because if that's the case, like, you have Valanciunas. Like, you have your big man veteran. Do you really need another? You have Bagley as well. So, like, I don't really know what the thought process was in that. And maybe he's good enough to where a team wants to trade for him. Maybe he's salary filler in a bigger trade that the Wizards are trying to facilitate. But I don't know. Maybe if you know why they extended him, you can DM me because I don't get it. And it's not really affecting anything. The Wizards have so much salary available that a contract like this on another team would be an awful overpay and a waste of money and someone that you want to trade. But on the Wizards, it doesn't necessarily matter, I guess, because they're so bad and their team's so young that they're really not paying anyone other than Kuzma, Brogdon, and Poole. So they can kind of get away with this. Maybe he's not going to play until they trade Valanciunas, and then he'll be playing until next deadline, and then they can trade. I'm trying to big brain this to try to figure it out. I just don't get it. I don't get it. You give a guy 2 years, $26 million, and he plays 18 total minutes for the first 27 games. I don't really understand it, especially on a tanking team. Like, you're trying to showcase your trade chips in the beginning and then trade them. I don't know. But if you know, DM me, because that was just something I thought about and I was kind of confused. And so that brings us to what I'm most excited about. This is a new segment on the pod. Greg's current top five. That's going to be my big board as of now, just the top five for the NBA draft in 2025. And I'm going to read it off, in order, and then I'm going to kind of give a little bit of explanation because now while I don't consider myself like a draft guru or anything like that, if you want good draft stuff, my guy Matt Modurno is really plugged into the draft. There's a bunch of other guys. No Ceilings NBA is really good draft stuff. They do a lot of work, and for me, I'm not necessarily like researching or anything or doing film review. Like I watch a lot of college basketball. I'm a big college basketball fan. I love it. And I watch try to watch every single team that I can whenever it's on. So like I've seen all the top guys. In action, and that's kind of what I base it on. And then later in the year, April, May, June, as the draft comes closer, I'll start to dive in to more in-depth research and film study and all that. But this is just as of right now, my top five is as follows. Number one, Dylan Harper. Number two, Cooper Flagg. Number three, Ace Bailey. Number four, Trey Johnson. And number five, Asa Newell. Here is my explanation. Dylan Harper, look, I understand Cooper Flagg is your consensus number one, and a lot of people like him there. And even if the Wizards at this moment took him, I'm not upset. I think he's a generational player. But man, if you've watched Dylan Harper and you don't think it's even a debate between who's number one, then I can't talk to you. Because this guy is just balling at Rutgers. He's hitting game-winning shots. He's leading them to big-time wins over ranked opponents. He's cooking. Doing it on both ends of the floor. He's a great defender too, finding his teammates. Like, he is the real deal. And I think for a team like the Wizards, getting a guy like that could be the centerpiece and the kind of launch pad to this rebuild turning into a tank, from a tank into real competitive basketball and into contenders. So that's who, if the season ended right now, I would confidently sit here and say that I would take Dylan Harper number one. And again, this is why there is a new segment every week, because next week it could be Cooper Flagg. And I don't want people to come at me if Cooper Flagg turns into a generational player, because again, this is going to change week to week. I have Cooper Flagg at number two. Pretty self-explanatory. He's so good. Watch him at Duke. He's so elite at such a young age, and he has all the intangibles to be a great NBA player.
Same goes for Ace Bailey. I mean, he's got the size and the frame. Obviously, I think his favorite player set is KD. He reminds me of KD, and that's like a pretty lazy like comparison, but it is true. Just a really tough shot maker, and someone that if the Wizards get the third pick and they get Ace Bailey again, probably would have gone number one last year. So, not the end of the world. That's why you're the worst team. So you give yourself more chances to get these top picks. Number four, Trey Johnson. I feel like not a lot of people have him in the top five. Maybe I'm wrong, but if you're watching him at Texas right now, he's unstoppable in terms of scoring the ball. I mean, 20 points per game on 48% from the field in college is superb. 43% from three. I mean, what else do I need to say? Like that alone is top five numbers, and the efficiency as well that he's doing it on a great Texas team is great to see. And so that's kind of where I have him. Really, really elite player. Really excited. Would be excited. Obviously the Wizards falling to four or five isn't ideal. But other than that, then I have Asa at number five. And this is probably my boldest take, but if you've watched this guy play, like he has what it takes to be a good NBA player. I think he's averaging 16-6 right now, shooting 60% from the field. Like that's terrific. 1.2 blocks, 1.3 steals per game. Really great. The 3-point shooting at 27%. Not ideal, but again, he's the best player on the 11-1 Georgia squad. That's really exceeded expectations this season. I didn't think Georgia would be this good, but here they are. And Ace is a big reason for that. And so I know a lot of people would prefer Igor Demin here or Nolan Treyer. Like I get it, and I wouldn't be mad either. But that's my top five right now, and it's going to change obviously throughout the season. But if you ask me right now, this would be my current top five of my big board. So that's it for that segment, and that's probably going to do it for this episode. I recapped a 1-2 week for the Wiz. Great win against Charlotte. Really well-rounded effort led by Poole's 27. Sar dropped 19-9. Koulibaly dominated against the Bucks in a loss with 20 points and a career-high 12 boards. Corey Kispert's come on strong, averaging 15 points over his last three. He's shooting, I think, 8 of 13 from the three over his last three since coming back from an ankle injury. That's 61%. That's terrific. I can't speak. Bob Carrington left the OKC game. We'll update on that injury status in a bit. But also Marvin Bagley exited after getting rolled up on with a knee injury. Does not look good. Again, we'll update that as the Wizards update that. Tank standings. The Wizards currently have a one, I think, 1.5-game lead on New Orleans for the worst spot. But the Pelicans should excel. And then three 7-win teams rounding out the top five. I should say bottom five of the league. And that's kind of it. The Wizards' upcoming schedule has got four winnable games. Next one's versus Charlotte, then the Knicks again, then the Bulls. So again, the Wizards are where they should be. That's what the Wizards are where they were expected to be. Pretty bad, but again, an expected level of bad. So at the end of the day, you can complain all you want, but you ask for the tank, you gotta embrace the tank. That's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate all you guys for tuning in. I'm happy to be getting back to these 1-a-week things, these 1-a-week episodes. That's kind of the regular scheduled program, and I think this is kind of the way to go. So, again, appreciate all you guys for listening, but that's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.